Can I first of all welcome you here today? Glad to see so many people turned out. We had another debate yesterday, and some of you were at that too, so you're real stalwarts in coming to two in a row. But it's always good to see a big turnout at lunchtime. As usual, we start now at 1 o'clock, and I try and finish as near to 2 o'clock as we can, so that people who have to get away can get away. There will, I think, still be some food and some drink next door if any of you want to stay for a little while after that. Just to explain how our debate will work, we give each of our speakers about 8 minutes to make their case and to put their point of view across. And then I give them a little time, no more than 10 minutes and sometimes less, to discuss between themselves what the others have said. And then I will open it up to the floor for questions and comments. When I do, please keep both questions and comments reasonably brief, otherwise we find we don't get enough people in. And also, if you could introduce yourselves if you do want to ask anything. We always set a question for these debates, not because we necessarily expect an answer, but because it does give a framework within which we can actually hopefully have an interesting discussion. Today our question is Kurdistan region in Iraq, what prospects for the future? And in a sense we will be spreading slightly wider than that, because Kurdistan's prospects for the future are so tied up with the future of Iraq as well, and so we may find it broadens out a bit. We've got a very good panel, I'm pleased to say, and I'm going to introduce them all now and then ask them one by one to make their presentations. Firstly, on my right we have Fala Mustafa Bakir, who became the head with ministerial rank of the Kurdistan Regional Government Department of Foreign Relations in September 2006. He previously served as senior advisor and minister of state to the Prime Minister of the KRG, Nechervan Barzani. Minister Bakir's responsibilities include maintaining relations with international institutions, receiving foreign delegations to the Kurdistan region, coordinating the activities of the KRG representative offices abroad, and liaising with the international media. He had great ministerial experience before that, but I won't go into all the detail of it, because what is important is that he's here today to talk to us from the perspective of the KRG and its future in international relations. Secondly, on my left, although he is going to speak last, I have Mike Gates, who was elected to Parliament in 1992. He is now the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee. He, having previously served on both the Defence Select Committee and the Foreign Affairs Committee, and he has an enormous experience both in security and in international affairs, and I'm delighted that he's able to be with us today. And then last but not least, we have Sir Hilary Sinnott, KCMG, who is a senior consulting fellow at IISS, where he specialises in South Asian affairs and post-conflict issues. Although I first met him in Islamabad when he was our High Commissioner, I think he's even more relevant today because he did work with the CPA Administrator, Ambassador Paul Bremer, in responsibility for civilian affairs in Iraq's 4 southern provinces, including the city of Basra. And so he brings a hands-on experience of that part of Iraq to us today. He has served in many other areas, Amman, Paris and Bonn. He has written a number of publications. Most recently he has produced a book called Bad Days in Basra, which I think was published in March. And I'm sure that if you want to get a copy of it, if you approach him afterwards, he'll tell you the best way to do that, and he might even tell you the price. I'm delighted to welcome you all today. I'm not going to say any more. I'm going to ask the Minister if he'd now address us for 8 minutes.
Thank you, Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. I'm very happy to be here with you this afternoon to discuss the future of the Kurdistan region of Iraq. I want to thank the Global Strategy Forum and especially Mr. Michael Ankran for organizing this wonderful event, and my fellow panelists, Mr. Gapes and Sir Sinnott, for taking part. The Kurdistan Regional Government in Iraq, led by Prime Minister Nechervan Barzani, is overseeing a broad program for economic and cultural development in the other Iraq. This development is supported by our political system and the safety and the security of our region. We have taken the first steps to establishing a fully democratic government within what is becoming a federal, democratic, and pluralistic Iraq. Some are skeptical of the possibility of democracy taking root in Iraq, but the people of the Kurdistan region already benefit from our nascent democratic system. Kurds, Turkmens, Arabs, Chaldeans, Assyrians, Muslims, non-Muslim Christians, and Yazidis are all living together in peace, because we believe in a culture of tolerance and living together. As part of our commitment to democracy, the major political parties of our region have banded together to create a government of unity. At this important stage, our political differences must be put aside in favor of cooperation. We do not claim a perfect or fully functioning democracy yet, but you must remember that just 5 years ago, we suffered under the dictatorship of Saddam Hussein. And furthermore, we are managing the transition from a strongly centralized country to one governed by the constitutionally enshrined principle of federalism. All this takes time and patience, but we are optimistic and excited that this transition is taking place. And while we do this, we will maintain our commitment to the Iraqi constitution. The second main support for the change taking place in the Kurdistan region is our good security record. The Kurdistan region of Iraq is peaceful and people are able to send their children to school and go about their daily business in the same way as the people do here in London. Just like the UK, we are not immune from the global phenomena of terrorism. There have been terrorist attacks in the Kurdistan region in the past. But thanks to the high level of security and the support of a cooperative and trusting public, insurgents and terrorists have never been able to establish a home or foothold in our area. And the attacks have been fewer than in some European countries. Because of these twin supports, we have been able to concentrate on our development in this region and this part of Iraq. A key factor in this is our relations with the federal government in Baghdad and our neighbors. The KRG is working in partnership with Baghdad to build a new Iraq, which should be a better Iraq. The federal character of Iraq was enshrined in the Constitution of 2005, and we in the region believe that this is the most effective way to organize our country. In the past, strong central control has meant nothing but persecution and poor administration and mismanagement. We are dedicated to supporting the government of Prime Minister Maliki and the Kurdish members of parliament and ministers in the federal government are a force for cohesion and good. The Kurdistan Alliance's recent and important support for Prime Minister Maliki in Basra exemplifies our commitment to the creation of a peaceful and developing country and the enforcement of the rule of law. The issue of Kirkuk is, and the other disputed territories is a high priority in our relationship. Article 140 of the Constitution outlined a democratic resolution to this issue. However, implementation of this article was slow in coming, and now the UN, under the Special Representative of the Secretary General, Mr. Stefan de Mistura, is addressing the issue. The Special Representative of the Secretary General has just recently issued part one of what will be a three-part report on this issue. As the Special Representative said, this report is non-binding and is meant to contribute to the development of processes to resolve these complicated and sensitive issues. We in the KRG have welcomed the UN to provide technical assistance in order to facilitate the implementation of Article 140. But overall, the KRG believes that the people of the disputed areas must be given the opportunity to choose for themselves by whom they are governed. Saddam Hussein's program of Arabization violently forced thousands from their homes. We are determined that the reversal of this process not occur through similar violence, but through peaceful and democratic means and constitutional way. At the same time, as we work with Baghdad on internal development, we work at building good relations with our neighbors. Iran and Iraq share a long border and a complicated history. We want positive and mutually beneficial relations with Iran, but these relations must be as with other sovereign states. Iran must not meddle negatively in the internal affairs of Iraq. Such activity brings nothing but hardship and strife to the people of Iraq. During recent weeks, significant progress has been made regarding the Kurdistan region's relations with Turkey. Enhanced relations with Turkey are possible, and we desire nothing more than a mutually beneficial normalization in our relations. Turkey benefits from this relationship the same way as Kurdistan region and all of Iraq in dealing with each other. The importance of this trade between Turkey and Iraq was exemplified by the fact that at the height of the incursion earlier this year, Turkey did not close its border crossings with the Kurdistan region of Iraq. The first high-level official meeting between the KRG and Turkey was held in May in Baghdad. It was conducted in a cordial and open atmosphere in which both sides stressed similar views on many issues and expressed a desire for common understandings and interests. We are encouraged by this development, as it has always been the KRG's position that there is no military solution to the problems along our border with Turkey. Dialogue and political negotiation are the only way to find a comprehensive and long-lasting solution. We now believe that, despite some opposition, the Turkish government is of the same opinion. We are hopeful that a path of diplomacy and dialogue has been established, and we will do our part to see that this path is followed. We are heartened by the policy of economic development instituted by the Turkish government. The KRG is committed to a policy of non-interference in the affairs of others, but we are sure that increasing economic development in Turkey will play an important role in neutralizing the PKK's influence and appeal. On the internal economic front, our main aim is to move from a command economy to a free market, one where the private sector is the primary engine of sustainable economic growth. In this regard, we are dedicated to attracting the best possible foreign direct investment. To do this, we have eradicated barriers to foreign investment, passed an attractive investment law, and established the Kurdistan Regional Investment Board to act as a one-stop shop for potential investors. We believe that our investment law is among the most investor-friendly structures in the entire Middle East, and we have seen important improvements in investment flows into the region. Our natural resources have attracted significant interest and investment. In the past, these have been more of a curse than a blessing, but today we are responsibly exploiting them in cooperation with a host of first-class international companies. The KRG continues to view a national oil law as a key priority for all Iraq. We are pleased and encouraged that, after constructive negotiations, Iraqi federal government has agreed to return to February 2007 oil law text as a basis for moving negotiations forward toward a national oil law. In addition to our oil and gas resources, there exists great potential in our infrastructure, agriculture, industry, manufacturing, education, health, and tourism sectors. In fact, regarding tourism in the Kurdistan region, I've just come back from Dubai, where Damac Property is one of the Middle East's foremost property development companies, announced that it will be building a multi-billion dollar tourism, residential and business complex just outside of Erbil, the capital of the region. This project is part of the KRG's outreach to Arab and the Gulf investors. We are also encouraging Iraqi investors from the rest of the country and those who fled Iraq to invest in our region as the gateway to Iraq. It's imperative that our businessmen from our country and our neighborhood play an active role in our economic development. This is yet more evidence that our belief that Kurdistan region is open for business and can become the business gateway to the rest of Iraq is correct. Companies established here can move south once the situation there stabilizes. Overall, we are determined to move from a culture of dependency to one of self-sufficiency. With the help of our friends in the international community, we are developing our human resources so that we are capable of looking after ourselves. We also understand that economic development means nothing without cultural development. The KRG is dedicated to enhancing the rights and freedoms of women so that they enjoy some opportunities and quality of life as men. Unfortunately, we're starting from a position far below what exists in the West. The past isolation of the Kurdistan region and its long history of violence means that women's rights have not progressed as they should have. But the KRG is now determined to make a stand on this issue. We have amended our region's laws to ensure that women have equal rights and are protected from violence, and we have imposed an oversight mechanism to ensure that our courts uniformly implement these laws. Furthermore, we have begun a public conversation led by the President and Prime Minister of the region to change outdated cultural attitudes and practices, practically with regards to violence against women. Of course, cultural changes take a long time, but we're sure that our combined approach of legal change and cultural development will yield results. Additionally, we understand the need for ongoing efforts to support the growing third sector in our region, and have been doing this wherever possible. Civil society organizations and NGOs are often better at achieving certain goals than the government. The KRG is dedicated to ensuring that civil society becomes a strong voice in the Kurdistan region of Iraq. We have created a Ministry of Region to support this. After being cut off for so long, since 2003, we have embraced the international community, and we've been proud to do so, not as recipients of aid, but as equal partners. Today, we are honored to have 12 foreign diplomatic representatives in Erbil, most at the level of council generals. And we will continue to expand our outreach to the world through KRG representation offices in order to enhance political, cultural, economic, and investment ties. Positive change is occurring in Iraq. It's taking hold in the Kurdistan region where stability and security has become the norm. The KRG is dedicated to being a responsive, responsible, efficient, and effective government. We are a forward-looking government emerging from a dark past into a bright future. I hope that after today you will have a better understanding of what we in the Kurdistan Regional Government in Iraq are trying to achieve and the success we are already making. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister, for a very positive and optimistic presentation. I'm now going to call on Sir Hilary Sinnott to speak to us for about 8 minutes.
Well, Minister, ladies and gentlemen, I think I should start with a disclaimer, which is to say that my experience in Iraq in the four southern provinces didn't particularly give me any great insights into the Kurdish region. But I was struck when I visited Erbil about a year ago by the contrast of the investment that was going on, the economic activity there, as a result of the comparative peace and stability compared to the rather parlous state of Basra. I'm going to offer some observations, and then I'm going to presume to offer some action points, since it's about prospects for the future. And I'll start with an observation, which is really looking back, it's quite remarkable how the Kurdish political groups have transformed from being essentially, please don't get me wrong, but essentially militant guerrillas, sometimes for a while fighting with Iran against Saddam's oppression, with the result of most terrible reprisals from Saddam, sometimes battling with each other, one must point out to that, and now an integral and extremely important part of Iraqi government and of Iraqi institutions. They managed to get for themselves a power of veto over the drafting of the constitution and achieved Article 140 about Kirkuk, which appears to point the way towards the acquisition of Kirkuk within a defined timescale. All this in relation to a population which amounts to only some 20% of the population of Iraq. And I suppose these arrangements reflect the long-standing wish of the Kurds to pursue autonomy. Even some would advocate the achievement of an independent Kurdish state. But one needs to bear in mind, perhaps, that estimates vary because censuses haven't occurred, but perhaps there are 25 to 30 million Kurds around altogether, of whom only 4 to 5 million are in Iraq. But these arrangements, these political arrangements within Iraq, also allow these objectives, autonomy or more, to be pursued further. So I want to apologize really by, I'm now going to focus on the difficulties. I mean, this is what I suppose diplomats do. You pocket the achievements and you focus on the difficulties. And I think what I'd like to suggest is that there is a tension between the long and the short term goals, if such as they are, more autonomy and independence. And that's, independence has been, I don't know whether it still is, a long term goal of many Kurds. There are risks, therefore, in overbidding and overreaching. And these risks can affect the security both of the Kurds and the Kurds in Iraq, and indeed the whole of the rest of the country, Sunni Arabs, Shia Arabs alike. And even they could threaten the continued existence of Iraq in its present form. And I'd like to touch on two main areas of danger. By playing hardball over Kirkuk, which is, of course, a nationalistic touchstone, and incidentally also has about 13% of Iraq's massive oil reserves, there is a risk that if the Kurdish authorities were to do this, they would exasperate and alienate other Iraqis. Not only other Iraqis, but the US, Iraq's neighbours, and even perhaps their own supporters. Insisting on a very high degree of autonomy for the Kurdish region, and by extension, therefore, to other regions in Iraq as well, this could lead the country to become utterly ungovernable. And I have to say that for all the difficulties over governance at present in Iraq, and there are enormous ones, it may not yet be the case that it's ungovernable. And pressure, if such exists, on Arabs and Turkmens to leave the Kirkuk region is hardly designed to win friends. Similarly, a hurried referendum, as is envisaged in Article 140 of the Constitution, seems unlikely to amount to a firm foundation for future stability. So that's the first issue, and I'm being frank here, as you gather. The second issue is not unrelated to this. I recall when I was in Erbil a year ago, the oil minister Sharistani was telling us that the hydrocarbons law was on the anvil, about to be completed. A few months ago, I shared a podium with Minister Sharistani and the Kurdish oil minister. And I have to say, listening to the debate between those two gentlemen, I didn't get the impression that that law was about to be passed. The resentment, quite honestly, was palpable, and there is developed, I think, an obduracy on both sides about this issue of the hydrocarbons law. So let me, with those observations, provocative observations perhaps, let me look at actions. And maybe it would be prudent, productive, to focus less on precise outcomes. And as a South Asia hand, I always think of, probably quite falsely, and I apologize if it's false, but I always think of Kashmir. As soon as one articulates a possible solution to Kashmir, almost by definition, that solution is unreachable, because all attention will be focused on the deficiencies of it. So maybe one should be focusing more on the process rather than the outcomes. And on Kirkuk, Minister, as you've suggested, as you've reminded us, the UN is pursuing the issue of Article 40 and is promoting a dialogue and consensus building. Surely action in this regard needs to be transparent, it needs to be fair. Perhaps it's not necessarily a good idea to force the pace too much, whatever Article 140 may have said about timing. And also, perhaps it's not a good idea to try and change facts on the ground during this period through, for example, pushing outwards from the 1991 Green Line. In such circumstances, an outcome might stick rather than being put into question as soon as it's ostensibly agreed. On the hydrocarbons law, which I've mentioned, as I've said, both sets of parties, both negotiating parties, seem to be obdurate. Notwithstanding the Kurdistan regional government's controversial arrangements with some oil companies, the major international oil companies seem unlikely to invest unless and until the situation becomes clearer. And as a result, it's the whole of Iraq that's losing out. The Kurdish people and Iraq as a whole, as a result of insufficient investment in the Kurdish oil. Or should I say, the oil in the Kurdish region. So perhaps this issue needs to be addressed more at a high political level, not just at a technical level. Some give and take by all concerned may be necessary, because it impinges on so many other issues. It's not just a question of dividing up the slice of the cake. It's much more important than that. I think I should also add, as regards action, and Minister, you've addressed this head on, the role of the PKK can't be ignored, as recent action by the government of Turkey has demonstrated. I don't think anybody would suggest taking on the PKK head on in the fastnesses of the Kandil Mountains in the north, but possibly there's more that could be done to obstruct their supply lines in the plains, and perhaps not enough has been done, not only by the Kurdistan regional government, but also by the government of Iraq. And a side effect of this would be that it would allay the concerns, help to allay the concerns one of Iraq's very important neighbours. But finally, and most importantly, I think, for all the deficiencies of the central government, and there are a lot of them, the continuation and lack of resolution of the various Kurdish-related issues threaten, in my view, the governability of the country as a whole. The country desperately needs to settle down and have a chance of some governance. If Iraq were to be split, the worst case, in my view, the regional and international consequences could be really horrendous. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And I'm going to ask Mike Gapes if he'll give us his views for about 8 minutes as well.
Thank you, Mike. I'd like to really take up where the other two speakers have taken us to. They've concentrated on both the internal economic and political process and also some of the difficulties. But I want to try and put this in a wider context. I am with the Foreign Affairs Committee visited Iraq and Baghdad in January 2006, and I'd previously been in Iraq in 2004 twice, and I've been to Basra three times now. And what is quite clear is that the situation in Basra in particular had deteriorated quite markedly from 2004 until 2006. And there was therefore a lot of scepticism when the Americans started the surge. And indeed, the Foreign Affairs Committee, we published a report in August last year where we said that we were very doubtful whether it would succeed. Well, I have to say, from all the reports and all the people who've been more recently, clearly we were wrong. And so were many other commentators and many other people. But nevertheless, there are still some quite difficult unresolved questions, not least to do with some of the issues that have already been touched on, but also to do with the ability of the Iraqi security forces and the Iraqi army to actually, in the long term, sustain the improved situation that has developed up to now. And I would argue that events elsewhere in Iraq can have very serious knock-on consequences for the Kurdistan region, and we need to take that into consideration. Secondly, there's been some very welcome improved political developments recently. Reference has been made to this dialogue between the Kurdistan regional government and the Iraqi government with the Turkish authorities. There's the fact that a number of the Arab states are now establishing diplomatic missions. The Emirates announced just this week in Iraq, and you'll recall that there was a withdrawal when, a few years ago, with the Egyptians following terrible terrorist events. Consequently, in that sense, there is a moves towards normalisation within the region as a whole. And then we've also had the recent welcome visit of Bernard Kouchner and the remarks that he's made and the shift in approach of the French government towards Iraq. So I would say, in some senses, there have been some positives. And Prime Minister Maliki has been in Tehran just a few days ago. And clearly there are some, at least, possibilities of more friendly relations with regard to the Iranians. But the Iranians were mentioned. Interestingly, the Iranians are very concerned about what the long-term intentions of the United States are in Iraq. And there's all this speculation in the media at the moment about future bases and how many years and where and all the rest of it. And I'm interested in this particularly because clearly the wider picture here is what the Iranian regime sees as its role, not just in Iraq, but in the whole region and in the world. We as a Foreign Affairs Committee went to Tehran last November, and we published a quite detailed report a few months ago following an inquiry that we carried out. And my perception is that the most important thing from Iran's point of view is a sense of legitimacy and recognition, and wanting the US to engage with them, not just about internal Iraq issues, but in the widest sense. It's a bit like, I would draw a parallel with the Soviet Union in 1933. The United States hadn't recognised it, and it didn't do so until that time. I'm not trying to draw any further parallels, but nevertheless, and certainly I don't want to go on to there to what happened in the 1930s, but certainly the Iranian revolutionary regime clearly feels that it can use its influence in Iraq as a tool to try to engage the attention of the United States, as it will also do with regard to its influence elsewhere, whether it be with Hezbollah or with Syria, or its potential, what we described as malign role in our report, in a number of regions. So therefore, although the Kurdish region may well be developing very well internally, and although relations with Turkey might be improving, nevertheless, geography means that factors going on somewhere else will have an impact also on that region. So what happens with regard to the internal power struggle in Basra, or the way in which Iran wishes to influence the developments in Iraq as a whole, could have knock-on consequences even when other positive things have been happening. The other point I would throw into this is that we are in a potentially very volatile period in the Middle East as a whole. There's the ongoing Annapolis process. There's the potential crisis which could come to a head at any time, and we've just avoided it temporarily, I suspect, with regard to internal Lebanese politics. There's the potential for an upsurge of Hezbollah attacks on Israel. There's the ongoing crisis within the Palestinian Authority, whether it's a move to re-establish a government of national unity, or whether it is a potential for no progress at all with regard to the establishment of a viable Palestinian state. I believe that all of those factors can have knock-on consequences, even though the people in the Kurdistan regional government are working so hard to try to resolve other issues. And I think we therefore, in a sense, because of geography, because of where you are, all of the players in the region and the neighbours have an influence in the possible outcomes. From what I know and people I've spoken to, I would say that the Kurdistan regional government is a beacon of hope and prosperity for the rest of Iraq, and it's a model for the rest of Iraq in many respects. It could also be a model for how to resolve some of the difficulties with regard to other neighbours. And hopefully the optimistic scenario will come through, and that there will be a comprehensive Arab-Israeli agreement, there will be a viable Palestinian state, there will be a comprehensive agreement which diffuses some of the bitter tensions in the region, and that will assist the work that's already being done. But I'm not by nature a pessimist, but I have to say there is a huge agenda and there are lots of potential pitfalls on the way forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to give a very brief opportunity for anybody to make comments. And I wonder if I can use my position as chairman just to throw one other thing in. When a number of us in this room were recently in Kuwait, The Kuwaitis were telling us that one of the things they were very conscious of was the fact that America was still very much involved with what was happening there, influencing what was going on, but that one day the Americans would leave and the Iranians would still be there. And they were developing their thinking on the basis that in the longer term they had to think about Iran rather than the United States. And I wonder whether that is something which comes into your thinking.
Well, thank you very much. Indeed, you have made some points I wanted to shed light on. Of course, we do not deny that we have made a change or a transformation from being a revolutionary movement in the mountains, fighting for our right to be a government responsible for the lives and the civilian affairs of the people. Absolutely, as you mentioned, that we have an internal fight, in KDP-PUK fight, which was damaging for our image, for our credibility, and it was a disaster for our people. But the day came when the leadership decided that enough is enough, and we have put our house in order and put aside our differences and started to work together. And this is where when we became stronger, and our political statement was much stronger, and we had the support of all the people behind us. For the Kurds in Iraq, they have decided voluntarily to be part of Iraq. But we want Iraq to be different from yesterday's Iraq. We want Iraq, tomorrow's Iraq. An Iraq that's federal, democratic, pluralistic, secular, that everybody's rights are protected. Kurds, Turkmen, Assyrian, Chaldean, Arabs, all the nationalities, the religions, etc., to be respected. Our objective is to build this new Iraq, and we are committed to the constitution of Iraq. So long as Iraq is governed by this constitution, we are part of Iraq, and we will work whatever we will do whatever we can to help build this Iraq. As for the issue of Kirkuk, this is an internal Iraqi matter, and Kirkuk, if it is important for other people because of the oil that includes, it's because of the oppression that it has suffered from. So Kirkuk has become the symbol of our oppression. Kurds, Turkmens, Assyrians have been expelled by the former regime and their rights have been usurped. What we ask for is the rights that were taken forcibly to be brought back peacefully, constitutionally and democratically. And if the Kurds would have wanted, we could have taken the law into our hands and have controlled Kirkuk immediately with the fall of the regime. Just to remind you that the Kurdish region, the Kurdistan region of Iraq, was the only region that was functioning, that we had our parliament, our government, universities were functioning, everything during the fall of the regime. So that was the only part of Iraq that was functioning. Our Peshmerga forces proudly fought side by side with the limited number of the special forces of the United States to liberate Mosul, Kirkuk and Diyala provinces. But we did not put any claim at that time. We did not do anything because we did not want to embarrass the United States or change the demographics, as you mentioned, that because we are sure about the legality of our claim and about the geographical documents, the historical documents, what we want. Therefore, we waited for the transitional administrative law, Article 58 of the TAL, which became Article 140 of the Constitution. This is the fifth year after the fall of the regime. We're still waiting for that to be implemented. We have shown utmost flexibility and patience, and the fact that time has been set is a sign of lack of trust. What we have seen from Baghdad, the Kurdish people in Iraq suffered. We have lost 182,000 people from the notorious Anfal operations. 8,000 Barzani men were rounded up and taken to unknown destiny. After the fall of the regime, we found the mass graves in the south of Iraq. 5,000 people were killed by the chemical gassing of Halabja. 4,500 villages were destroyed in Kurdistan. This is our history in living together with our Arab brothers in Iraq. So what do you expect us to do? We wanted guarantees. We wanted constitutional guarantees so that these things will not happen. Iraq invaded Kuwait. Kuwait is an independent sovereign country. Iraq invaded it. What do you expect from a country that used chemical gases, destroyed its own villages, fought for 8 years with Iran, invaded Kuwait? What else? Therefore, we have been patient, but we wanted the constitution to solve our problems. As for Kurdistan region, Kurdistan is committed to the constitution, and we are not putting any pressure on Arabs or Turkmens to leave Kirkuk. What we ask for is the right to be returned and for all the people. As Prime Minister Nechivan Barzani said, we are ready for power sharing arrangements in Kirkuk, because Kirkuk is not only confined to the Kurds. We have Kurds, we have Turkmen, we have Assyrian, we have Chaldean and Arabs. All of these communities live together. And this can be only done in negotiation and peaceful coexistence, because we did not want to go into using the force, because that would not be in anybody's interest. Therefore, we have been patient for a long-lasting peaceful solution. The referendum, we've been patient and we've been waiting for that, but it's important for that issue to be resolved, otherwise Iraq will never see any stability. And if you go back to history, Kirkuk has been the reason of all the problems that have happened in Iraq. In 1970, Saddam Hussein signed the 11th of March 1970 agreement with late General Barzani. After 4 years, he regret that he did not commit or honor the agreement, made the agreement with the Shah of Iran, and for the sake of destroying the Kurdish movement. Then, at that time, they made concession. They gave control of the Shatt al-Arab waterway to Iran. In 1979, during the revolution in Iran, Iraq thought that Iran is weak now. They wanted to get back what they have made the concession on. Then it went into a war for 8 years. As a result of that, they were indebted, invaded Kuwait. So all the history of Iraq started with not solving problem, and they were dealing with Kirkuk on day-to-day basis. Today I am weak, I can't forward to you, and tomorrow I am stronger, I will not care about you. Therefore, this problem has to be solved. As the issue of the oil law, the main difference between our approach and Baghdad approach is we want a free market economy, and this is an economic matter, this is not political. It's not Kurdish versus Arab, it's not KRG versus Baghdad. Two different approach. We've been living in Iraq under strong centralized rule, oil industry that was state-run, which destroyed the whole Iraq. So therefore today we are for a free market economy, for foreign investment, companies to come and help all the people of Iraq. And oil and gas belong to all the people of Iraq in all the regions and governorates. Therefore, we're not claiming that what is there in the region is only for us. And remind you that the KRG has already committed itself to the principle of wealth sharing or revenue sharing. Only 17% of whatever oil is extracted would be for the KRG, and the rest, which is 83, would be for the rest of Iraq. So it's not that we take the oil for ourselves. So there would be no need for people to think that if we get Kirkuk or when Kirkuk joins the KRG, Kurds will go their own way. The Kurdish leadership is wise enough. They know very well the circumstances and what's in the interest of the people. Although the public, during the 2005 elections, people voted for an independent Kurdish state, but the leadership managed the expectations of the people and decided to go for a free, federal, democratic, pluralistic Iraq, which will be in the interest of the region and all of Iraq. And as for the KRG contracts, whatever we have signed in the KRG area are all legal, constitutional, and backed by the constitution. So we fought for that constitution. For those of you who did not know, we were the main contributors to the constitution, and we really meant what was there in the constitution, and we fought for that, and we are not ready to make any concessions on the rights that we have got in the constitution. And what you referred to for Dr. Shahristani, this is not a collective view of the Iraqi government, this is an individual view, and therefore Prime Minister Barzani, when he was in Baghdad, he had direct talks with Prime Minister Maliki, and he is due to go back to Baghdad before the end of this month to have another session with Prime Minister Maliki in order to reach agreement on the hydrocarbon law. If there is will, there is way, and we believe that Iraq needs more oil to be exported, to be produced, so that we can rebuild the country which has suffered a great deal in the past. As for the issue of the PKK, I would just to make sure that we in the KRG are not responsible for the actions of the PKK. PKK is a problem. The only difference that we have with Turkey is that this problem cannot be solved militarily. There has to be a comprehensive solution for this problem, and we believe that border security is a joint responsibility, and we in the KRG are committed to the measures that we have announced last year. We will continue to enforce these measures to show our goodwill to the Turkish side that we are for good relations with Turkey, and since 1991 until now we have proven to Turkey and other neighbors that we are a factor for stability, and we do not pose a threat, and we do not want to interfere in the internal affairs of Turkey.
Thank you very much. Hillary, do you want to respond if we open it to the floor?
Just a quick comment, if I may, and a question. First of all, I was most heartened, Minister, by what you said at the beginning about being supporting of Prime Minister Maliki. Clearly that implies a degree of readiness to compromise. Now, I have to say, I think in your last intervention, you offset that a bit by your sort of adamant statement that you're not ready to make concessions over the Constitution, which, of course, is a highly controversial document. and all, well, the Kurdish regional government have a view on it. The others have different views. However, that's my comment. My question, though, is actually the same as Mr. Ankrum's. I was struck again in your first intervention by your statement that Iran must not meddle. And in a way, that statement, I thought, was in a lot of contrast to the rather sort of peaceful tone of your first intervention, if not the second. And I wondered if you could elaborate. What do you mean by, how is Iran meddling, or how might they meddle? What do you mean by Iran must not meddle?
Indeed, with the liberation of Iraq, some of our neighbors did not play a positive role in helping build a new Iraq. And both Iran and Syria did not play a positive role. And we want these governments to deal with Iraq on the basis of sovereign states, to have relationships that would help the people. If they cannot help us positively, then they should stay neutral and not interfere in the internal affairs of Iraq, because Iraq is for the people of Iraq, and it's the Iraqis who must decide their own future. And we believe that as a good neighborly relationship based on mutual respect, mutual understanding, and mutual benefit has to be in place, and for no country to consider itself as a guardian on the people of Iraq, because people of Iraq voted for the constitution, and the overwhelming majority of the people of Iraq wanted this constitution and voted for it. Going back to Prime Minister Malik, I just want to say that after what happened in Basra, a positive environment came into being, which proved that if we stay together, we can achieve a lot of progress. We in the KRG, we are thankful for the United States, for the United Kingdom, and all the other coalition forces who have helped to liberate Iraq from the tyrannical regime of Saddam Hussein. We believe that it's the Iraqis' responsibility to provide security for their own people, but until we are there, until we build a proper Iraqi military force, security force, police force, we need the United States to be there in order to make sure that we can defend our own country. And Kurdistan is the success story. It's with the help of the United Kingdom, with the United States, that we have been able to bring this model that could be a model for all of Iraq. And we believe that federal solution is the only viable solution that can work in Iraq, because Iraq is a complicated situation.
Thank you.